This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. COVID-19 infections continue to rise around the country, and many cities and states are implementing new restrictions. Public health experts see these steps as a necessary part of slowing the spread of this disease. But it's undeniable that these restrictions will also have an impact on local governments, which are already struggling to survive. At the federal level, a stimulus package intended to ease the pain of local economies has stalled in the Senate, with no clear path forward. So what will that mean for a city like Milwaukee, which in some ways still hasn't fully recovered from the Great Recession? A recent report published by the National League of Cities looked back at how federal funding impacted the economic recovery of cities and states during the Great Recession, and the financial strain they're dealing with today. Phil Rocco is an assistant professor at Marquette University and one of the authors on the report. He joins me now to talk about it. Phil, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Hey, good to be with you, Joy.
Take us back to the Great Recession. How did cities survive?
One way of thinking about it is this. We think about the federal response to the Great Recession in terms of support for various industries that were on the verge of failing. But if you think about cities like an industry, cities and states together contribute about $1 trillion to gross domestic product. They employ millions and millions of workers. And the work that cities do in providing services that we all use have a huge knock-on effect on the rest of the economy. Cities purchasing affects what happens in regional economies. So what happened during the Great Recession is you had an initial wave of fiscal stimulus from the federal government because, remember, because of balanced budget restrictions at the local and state level, when cities lose revenue, like when a recession happens, they lose tax revenue and they begin spending more on services, they are not allowed to run deficits. Cities and states can't run deficits. And so how do they respond? Well, unless the federal government is there to provide stimulus, cities either have to raise property taxes, as we're going to probably see here in Milwaukee this coming year, or, and usually both, cut services as well, or use some sort of bonded debt. But in the early days of the Great Recession, the federal government provided a sort of stimulus program, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which allowed cities and states to stave off some of the more immediate effects of the crisis. But what happened was by 2011, the policy response to the federal government quickly dried up. The relief programs were discretionary, and by the year 2011, those programs had dried up. They weren't necessarily designed to respond to changes in long-term unemployment. And so kind of after the attention to the Great Recession had faded, cities were still struggling. And what ended up happening was really across the board, cities across the country cut expenditures on a number of services, laid off millions and millions of workers. And these decisions, which in many ways were forced onto cities by the federal government, had really important implications for the economy in various regions.
We see a lot of this playing out in Milwaukee, and we'll get into some of the program cuts that happened here in the city in just a moment. But there's also a complicating factor in the city of Milwaukee that isn't present in every major city, and it specifically has to do with its funding structure. Can you unpack that a bit?
Yeah, so one way of thinking about it is there are three primary sources of revenue for Milwaukee and really all cities. There's the revenue that the city generates from taxes and fees itself. There's revenue that it gets from the state in the form of revenue sharing. And then there's revenue that it gets from the federal government in the form of grants. And in Milwaukee in particular, state shared revenue is really, really important. It composes one of the largest, if not the largest, share of revenue in every year. So when the state changes its fiscal policies, that has a huge effect on Milwaukee, independent of what Milwaukee does in terms of taxes and fees. And about 83% of intergovernmental transfers to Milwaukee come in the form of the state shared revenue. And in the preceding years before the Great Recession, the state had really failed to increase that shared revenue in proportion to the growth of state tax collections. And had state revenue sharing kept pace with inflation, it would have been about 58% higher in 2015 than it was. So already, even without the effects of the recession, Milwaukee was receiving a sort of lower and lower share of state revenue as the policy sort of drifted. And by the time that the recession happened, the effect of that really was magnified. And so, you know, lacking a lot of other options, Milwaukee responded by doing something that, you know, I think for homeowners is sort of, you know, sort of the bane of their existence, which is it raised property taxes. They increased by 14% between 2011 and 2015. But it's important to think about that doesn't happen in a vacuum. That happens in the context of federal and state policy responses. And that's one sort of tool that Milwaukee used, albeit an unpleasant one, to respond to the Great Recession.
Well, and it's one of the only tools that's really available to Milwaukee, it seems. Most states do allow their largest municipality some amount of leeway in creating special taxes. But here in Wisconsin, that really hasn't been allowed. There have been a few small exceptions to that for things like building Miller Park and other special projects. But aside from that, the city has been really kind of hamstrung, it seems, by the state.
Yeah, this is true. And I think this is another case in which, just as with revenue sharing from the state can, through preemption law, constrict the ability of large cities to change their sort of fiscal reality when a crisis like this hits. I mean, one way of thinking about it is what you really want in a fiscal crisis is flexibility. And you want the ability to develop packages of options that don't, first of all, really result in further economic decline when you cut services, but also don't result in service cuts that disadvantage the least well-off among us. And when state revenue sharing dries up and when there are preemption laws that constrict local government's options, we find around the country, really not just in Milwaukee, local governments end up having to make choices that are really painful, choosing between maintaining funding for public libraries and health departments, choosing between brownouts at fire protection services and restrictions in trash collection, or even in some cases, streetlights. These are choices that, you know, no mayor, no city council member, no county executive really wants to have to make. And it's sort of one example where when we see inaction on the part of higher levels of government, it's not merely the absence of action, it's forcing the most painful choices onto the people who are at sort of the closest front line to the action.
To some extent, we're talking about the past, we're talking about the Great Recession, but as, you know, this study points out, it has a huge impact on what we're dealing with today. When we talk about the cuts that happened at a number of agencies in Milwaukee, how has that impacted the health of the city today?
Well, I think when you look, for example, at the health department, I think in the report we show that there's a 16% cut in the health department in Milwaukee between 2008 and 2015. There's a 16% loss in constant dollars for the department. And I think one thing that we sort of see kind of around the country is that that leaves the public health system in a pretty dire kind of shape, really prior to the pandemic. And I think another really good example of this is the city of Cincinnati, where the health department every single year receives less and less funding for emergency preparedness. And you know, when you're bringing that into the context of the pandemic, I mean, all of the capacity for public health response is at the local and state levels, right? The direct responsibility for those things is the local and state governments. And I think that that's really, I think it's underappreciated how dangerous it might be to make public health infrastructure contingent on revenue from governments that are so structurally fiscally constrained. And this is why when we think about what should the federal response to COVID be, it's not just about emergency relief. It's really about asking the question, should we be asking local and state governments to bear the burden of financing this really, really important activity when they are already so fiscally constrained?
Right now, there has been relative inaction at the federal level. There was, of course, the CARES Act that allocated money to local governments. But since then, there really hasn't been anything. And a lot of governments, including the city of Milwaukee, are really in a bind right now. What does the future look like if we continue to have federal inaction?
The future for cities is, I think, very, very grim if there is not federal action. And I think that the clearest example of this is that during the Great Recession, the failure of the federal government to respond really slowed down the economic recovery. So for a given unemployment gap shock, cuts to state and local spending offset 25% of the federal government's total stimulus. So in other words, because the federal stimulus was inadequate, every single cut that local and state governments sort of offset the effects of the stimulus the federal government did provide. And the failure of the federal government to provide state and local aid actually lengthened the period of time that we spent in economic recovery. And the reason why is very, very obvious. Local government cuts have a huge impact on all kinds of economic activity. One of the most important examples of this I see in the report was in Allegheny County, which is where Pittsburgh is. The county proposed a cut of about half of the bus service in the county. It was a huge cut. And immediately, firms that were making decisions about whether or not to locate in the county decided to pull out, and their plans to add jobs to the Pittsburgh region were scuttled. That's the kind of thing that can happen when there is an inadequate federal response. So I think the language that's typically used, that Congress doesn't want to provide a so-called bailout to local and state governments, is really misleading, because just as Congress has an incentive to keep other parts of the economy afloat, you think about the airline industry, you know, local and state governments contribute about $1 trillion to GDP. They account for millions of jobs in the economy. Not supporting them in the midst of this pandemic is the same, if not worse, than as not supporting other industries. And so I think when we think about the choices that state and local governments are going to have to make, it's worth thinking about all of the social services and infrastructure that they keep up and provide.
It's interesting to look at cities and states as a kind of industry, because, of course, as you're describing it, I'm going, well, sure, airlines are important, but everybody has to live in their city and state. That's what makes up the United States.
Right. I mean, I think the way that I like to describe it is, in state and local bodies of law, there are things that state and local governments have to do. They're mandated to do. Public health is one of them. And not supporting state and local governments in the midst of a crisis is the same as saying, you know what, we don't really care that much about these functions like public health.
Yeah, it seems like saying, you know, we're not that interested in public health is we're not that interested in the American people.
Yeah, and I think there's a larger political, and I don't mean, you know, Democrat versus Republican reality to this, but a structural aspect of American politics that can make it easy to ignore state and local governments. So in other federal countries, state and local governments have a kind of formal seat at the table. In Canada, they have things called First Ministers' Conferences, which are formal meetings between the cabinet of the federal government and the main premiers of each of the provinces, right? There's a formal seat at the table. In the United States, we treat state and local governments really as just sort of special interest groups. They don't have formal seats at the table. It can be difficult for them to get a phone call with the White House. There's not that sort of negotiation. And what that means is that their interests, which are really more than just part of the economy, but they also play an important role in structuring our society, they really get ignored. And I think it's kind of ironic that the Senate, which is supposed to be the territorial body in Congress, right? It's two members for each state. It's supposed to sort of look like an even representation of states. That's really been the body that has held up state and local aid. So there's a deep irony there that is supposed to be the sort of territorially representative body, and yet the aid that territories need, states and local governments, has really been denied them.
So if we do have a federal plan that makes it through the Senate, is approved by the president, what would that look like ideally?
Well, I think right now what state and local governments need is kind of direct relief. So just general support payments that are not made conditional on too many things, right? They're just sort of general support payments to help them strengthen their revenue base for the duration of the crisis. And the numbers for that change, I think the sort of current state and local revenue losses over the next few fiscal years total to something around $500 billion. But I think going forward, it's worth thinking about whether or not we should have a program of general revenue sharing, as we did in the 1970s and through the 1980s, that provided states with general revenue support in good times and bad. And you could imagine a program that when economic crises worsen, the program gets tripped off and money flows from the federal government to state and local governments to, again, not as a bailout by any means, but to help support the system of federalism that we have in the United States.
Well, Phil Rocco, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Great to be with you, Joy.
Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's also one of the authors of a recent report on the importance of federal funding, published by the National League of Cities.